It is like Christmas and New Year's and every other big holiday all wrapped up into one. It is Election Day. Beth Shapiro says, and like Hanukkah, our holiday, Beth, it's Election Day, one of the most exciting days every 2 years that I can think of, having covered politics for, 35, 40 years or so. And here we go with our Election Day edition of Political Rewind. We've got a great panel here for the show today. And before I introduce them and we start talking about what's going on out there, I want to remind you all that we'll be with you throughout the day and evening. You'll hear updates on what's happening on All Things Considered across the state, starting at 4 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, we're going to be doing a Political Rewind TV election special. You can watch it on GPB TV. Then at 8 o'clock, we're moving into the radio studios here, and we will be on the air throughout the night, I think at least until midnight or so, depending on what happens, of course, in the governor's race first and foremost. But we'll be sharing our time with NPR. You'll hear their national reporting, and we'll bring you a lot of updates on statewide races here. We've got reporters in the field who will be phoning in their stories for us. So lots happening here at GPB. We'd love it if you stay with us throughout the day and the evening. Kevin Riley, the editor of the AJC, is here. I brought a blanket and a pillow, Kevin. I figure I'll be here all night.
I am, too. I've gotten to the point where the thing I hope most for is a quick count of the votes. I don't even care anymore how it comes out.
Well, we're going to, at some point, we'll get to that and get everybody's sense of what's happening with that. Across from you at the table, Julianne Thompson, who is a longtime Republican strategist, activist in the state Republican Party, and I just learned now the Women for Trump Georgia chair. Wow.
Thanks for having me.
That's a big deal. Did Donald Trump, do you get anything from Trump when you get that title? Does he like
a case of wine?
Haven't gotten anything from Donald Trump whatsoever. No.
You were in Macon, I assume, on Sunday.
I was in Macon, and it was the energy was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. It looked like a big crowd out there on TV. Elena Parent is with us, Senator Parent, DeKalb County Democrat. How are you, Elena?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Are you wearing your Georgia voter sticker because you voted today?
No, I voted about 10 days ago, but I like to remind other people that it's an election day.
Sure, okay.
I'm also wearing my Stacey Abrams bobble earrings.
Okay.
Dangle earrings.
Maybe people will see those on Facebook Live, which you can watch, of course.
If these headphones are so big, though, Bill, it's causing trouble.
I'm sorry. Let's see if we can find some AirPods for you, Elena, and Beth Shapiro, who I mentioned a minute ago. Longtime pollster, consultant, did a lot of work for Democratic candidates primarily, but also a lot of work for nonprofits. Now she keeps telling us she's retired, but you are as in the know as any retired person out there.
You know, you can take the girl out of politics, but you just can't take the political junkie out of the girl.
All right. So the polls have been open since 7 o'clock this morning, and the reports we're getting are that there's just incredibly crowded polling places all over the state. Let me just go around briefly. What are you all hearing in your areas?
A steady turnout. Just people are showing up. I'm a good government person at heart. I love election days. I love the fact that people are voting, and I'm glad to hear that people are turning out and voting.
Right, and I've heard reports of when there are some lines, people are kind of enjoying it, and you know, and then other people who say, "Good, this shows that people are engaged, and the more people we have vote, the better."
I've heard that there's been a lot of civility at the polls. I myself voted about 10 days ago as well. My husband voted this morning when the polls opened. It was pouring down rain, but he said the line was way out the door. It took him about an hour and a half or so to vote. But it's very exciting. Election day is a wonderful thing.
We've got reporters all over the place, Bill, and I'm not hearing from anybody who's not saying turnout's high or lots of people are voting. I mean, it looks like it could be some kind of record.
Yeah, I mean, we had 2.1 plus million people who voted early, which smashed every record in the state for early voting. So we expect the voting today is going to be pretty significant. But, you know, Elena, it's interesting. I think the numbers are 6.9 million Georgia of potential voters. So even if we get up to 3.5-4 million people, there are an awful lot of people who just don't do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're registered maybe through when they get their driver's license or something else, but maybe they've never actually engaged.
Now, I don't want to launch us into this whole controversy about accessibility to voting, but we do have a system in this country that makes it somewhat hard for people to vote.
What does that mean?
It could be a lot easier to vote by mail. There are all kinds of other systems around the world and that are available, and we do it a certain way that does make it harder for people to just vote.
You're not talking specifically about Georgia. You're talking about other states as well, or are you talking Georgia?
The United States.
The system in the United States, I would
say.
We
vote on a work day as opposed to a Saturday.
Well, I respectfully disagree. I mean, you can vote on a Saturday during early voting.
Not in every state.
But you can in Georgia. And you have over a month to early vote in Georgia. And then, of course, you have Election Day. And there are record numbers of people that are registered to vote in Georgia. It's easier than ever before to register to vote in Georgia. Stacey Abrams put on her own campaign literature, it's easy to vote in Georgia. So, I mean, this notion that we've made it difficult to vote, I think, is incorrect.
Yeah, I'd rather go ahead, Beth, real quick.
I think what makes it difficult to vote is not voting per se, but the political atmosphere in which we live, and I think that a lot of people are just turned off by politics, period. And I think that has a depressing effect on voter turnout.
All right. What I'd love to do here is park that. I think that's a conversation that we've been trying. We've had that off and on throughout this election cycle. We certainly know that Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams, you couldn't ask for a more dramatic storyline than two people who have stood at opposite ends of the voting system, with Stacey Abrams having gone out to expand the voting pool with her Georgia.
New Georgia Project.
And with Brian Kemp. Accusing her at times of turning in fake registrations, illegitimate registrations, whatever. Okay, so let's put that aside, because right now the election we have is the election we have. We may want to go back to this issue in the days to come, because we don't know what's going to happen overnight tonight with the election. But let me go back to looking at polling places. Early this morning, we sent out a tweet and said, be reporters for us, all of you out there who listen to the show, and tell us what you're seeing. And here's what we got from some people. Grant Blankenship, our own Grant Blankenship, said the line at St. Paul AME in Macon, when I got there, some said it had taken an hour to get to the front. When I left, the line was just as long, but moving quickly. Richard Chambers says long lines, machines offline, extended voting hours, and much more. I guess that's actually from Georgia Pundit. But what that one refers to, Kevin, is the fact that we've seen problems in Fulton County, where in a couple of precincts, the machines either have had technical issues, or there aren't enough machines, there aren't enough ballots. Pittman Park Recreation Center in Atlanta was mentioned. And out your way, Julianne, Gwinnett County has had some significant issues at a polling location or two. In fact, out in Suwannee, I think they're talking about extending the polling hours for an additional half hour to deal with that.
Someone actually messaged me on Facebook this morning to ask my advice on that, and they contacted the Secretary of State's office, who then opened an investigation. So I assume that's why they're extending the voting hours.
Beth, we should say that having voting problems is nothing unusual in an election in Georgia.
It wouldn't be in an election here or anywhere if we didn't have voting problems. I think that for every voting problem we hear about, there are many more precincts across the state where voting is taking place in a very smooth manner. So I think the challenge for local elections offices and is to be prepared when the inevitable happens, so that they've got crews ready to go out and fix machines or replace machines. And in some counties, that's done better than in others. But I just think we have to be careful about making blanket pronouncements about voting problems, because that also contributes to depressing turnout.
And let me say, I can't speak to all local elections board, but as far as Gwinnett is concerned, Lynn Ledford runs one of the most professional boards of elections in the entire state of Georgia, if not the entire country. So I know she'll do the right thing and make sure that that voter integrity is protected.
So here we go. We're plunging into an issue I was hoping to avoid, but you're praising her, but we do have to remember that it was in Gwinnett County where we saw an issue with some 49,000 registrations that were not exact matches. There's been a lawsuit over it. So Gwinnett, unfortunately, has been in the center of some of the legal activity around what the lawsuit litigants are claiming is suppression of the vote.
Well, that's a lawsuit, and I'm not going to speak to that right now, but I will speak to the reputation of Lynn Ledford, and it's above reproach when it comes to elections.
Okay. I want to keep going. Catherine Keena says that she voted at First Presbyterian Church on Washington Avenue in Savannah. The line was 70 minutes long. And going to what you've already said, atmosphere was cheery as friends, neighbors, and colleagues greeted each other. It seemed well organized. As we go along, we will share with you some of the other comments that you've made about voting. And by the way, if you're in a precinct or have been to a precinct where you've had problems in other parts of the state, tweet us at PoliticsGPB. We'd like to know what's going on in your community.
The other thing voters should know is that if they are in line to vote at 7 p.m., which is the closing time, they will be allowed to vote. So be in line by 7, and you'll be allowed to vote. And it's not unusual that precincts stay open for an extra hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours to accommodate the people who were in line at 7.
Right, which is why we're not getting out of here much before 4 a.m. Right. tomorrow morning. Baker Owen says at 11 o'clock in Grant Park, much longer lines than in 2016. And he said there's a 30-minute wait right now. And then he said in a subsequent tweet, whoops, spoke too soon when the line went around another corner I didn't anticipate, 45 minutes. So we're seeing that all over the state. All right. We've had some of our GPB reporters out talking to voters around the state. Let's just spend a minute or so listening to what they have to say and then come back and get the panel's thoughts on all this.
My name is Damani Q. Williams, and I voted because, you know, one, that's my citizen duty, and especially as a black male, a lot of times we don't vote. You know, I felt as though it was important, especially with the current person who's in office right now. You know what I'm saying? It's important to try to weave that out a little bit, you know, not to be too specific.
My name is Nathaniel Anderson, and I am here at the Vinings Public Library, and I voted because I am very disgusted with the way that the country is headed under the current administration and the lack of control that the Senate and the House has put on the president.
My name is Geraldine Hamilton. I'm from Savannah, Georgia, and this is White Bluff area, and we are voting at Windsor Forest Baptist Church. It is so important to vote when we are thinking about our rights and what our country has fought for. Even if you don't agree, in order for us to have any improvement, we need to vote to voice our opinion. The wait is worth it.
I'm Bernadette Callahan. I live on the south side of Savannah, and I'm at the First Baptist Church on White Bluff Road. It's important to vote because I've been around a long time. And I believe in the Constitution, and I believe that I do not want to go to like a socialist state or a sanctuary state.
Hi, my name is Miguel Ramirez, and we're here at the Vinings Public Library. Us being young, we always think like, oh, we're not into politics, but seeing after the 2016 election how a lot of stuff has changed and affected us, we decided instead of, you know, showing our support or disapproval on Facebook, we might take action and actually get involved in the government process. Mm-hmm. We've been here since 7:30, and we just got out at 10:11, and there's still a line around the building.
So those are just some of the voters we heard. First of all, one of the things that I was interested in, Kevin, is we listened to a lot more sound of both people who said they were voting. We tried not to ask them to talk about partisanship, but a lot of them, as a woman in Savannah, she was voting because she supports Trump. A couple others said they don't support him. But one of the things we heard as we listened to lots of different sound coming into us was how many young voices, how many young people seem to be turning out to vote.
Yeah, it does seem like that number is up, but we'll see. We'll see. Sometimes, you know, it depends on the polling place you show up at or the people that you ask. I mean, we just have a report at AJC.com that the head of Cobb County's elections says the turnout today is beyond what she and her staff expected and more than they've ever had in a midterm.
All right. So, Elena, this is one of those moments. It's 2:21 on Election Day afternoon. We get all these anecdotal reports on the number of people out there who are voting, and we start trying to guess. Well, they're showing up in this particular city, in Georgia, which is a heavily African-American city. Well, they're turning out in rural precincts that are heavily Republican. Do we learn anything by the extraordinary size of the turnout yet, or do we just wait till the votes are counted?
Well, I think that it does demonstrate that the public is engaged. People, I think on both sides, view it as a very critical election. The president purposely is a sort of polarizing and dramatic figure, and then that shapes the way both sides, both parties, view him and view this election. And so it doesn't really surprise me that turnout is up across the board. And, you know, and it is a good thing to have people participate. It does appear we can't. I do think from today it's all anecdotal. It doesn't really tell us anything until the polls close. But you can look at the early vote numbers. And some of the striking things were that the turnout among younger folks, it was way up. And the gender gap was enormous, just enormous. In my opinion, I mean, it was like 12 points more women.
And I think both of those trends, the early vote out, early turnout demographics, as well as the turnout in general today, bode well for Democrats because historically, in Georgia at least, Republicans vote in higher numbers in off-year elections than Democrats do, and I think that one of the many things that Stacey Abrams' campaign has done extremely well is that they have targeted Democratic-leaning voters who don't normally vote in midterm elections. And I can speak very well to that because I live in one of those areas in-town Atlanta areas like the parts of DeKalb that Senator Parent represents, which are full of Democratic-leaning white voters. And we are areas that generally are ignored by statewide candidates. They don't canvass, they don't mail, they don't call. And the Abrams campaign has been giving a lot of love to these areas. And we've seen tremendous turnout during early voting at those at the precincts serving those areas. And we're hearing reports of good turnout at the precincts today in those areas.
Julianne, tell me if this is overly simplistic or expand on it. In 2016, President Trump obviously lost big swaths of metro Atlanta. You know, we had Hillary Clinton win Cobb County and Gwinnett County, as we know. And he certainly didn't perform the way you would like to have seen him perform in Fulton County, whatever. But he made up for it in enormous numbers in outlying areas of the state. Rural Georgia. Is that the pattern we're going to be looking at tonight in terms of how Brian Kemp manages to overcome whatever lead Beth Shapiro's talking about in Metro?
I think so. I think that if we look at the way that Secretary Kemp has run his campaign, I mean, yes, he has had a big presence in Metro Atlanta, but he has really focused his campaign outside Atlanta in the more rural areas. He's done two statewide bus tours all over the entire state of Georgia. The second bus tour, he concentrated on South Georgia. Immediately following the hurricane, he was the only candidate that went to South Georgia to meet with the victims of the hurricane. He has really connected with rural Georgia. And I think that, yes, female voter turnout is high, but it was high in 2016 as well. And people were saying that that was somehow going to be reflective of suburban white females getting out the vote for Hillary Clinton, yet suburban white females voted for Donald Trump by 53%. So I think a lot of times when we're talking about the female vote, we automatically think that women are monolithic in our thinking, and we're not. And the top issues for women are the economy and jobs and public safety.
Well, there has been a huge backlash among women, especially white women in the suburbs, women who are educated across the entire country, against Donald Trump and his divisive politics.
As I was saying, conservative women, Republican women also make up the female vote. It is not just Democratic women, and it is not just women that lean Democrat.
All right. So I want to, you know, kind of find a middle ground between what you both just said. Kevin, we certainly know that women have, for whatever reason, really come out strongly this year in, I think, virtually unprecedented number. Your polling, your most recent poll, do you have the numbers by any chance? It had women supporting Donald, supporting Stacey Abrams in much bigger numbers than they did Brian Kemp. Plus, you've got all these women on the ballot this year who are there as Democrats largely.
Well, it's 13 points among women, but I think Julianne has a point that's worth paying attention to and talking about, which is this. I don't think women are monolithic.
No,
certainly
I'm
women I know
that
don't all act the same way and think the same way. But more important, they may feel this way about Trump, but they're not voting on Donald Trump in this election. I mean, in the end, so the 6th district, everyone's wound up about that. You have two women running. So what does that mean? Does that mean that women there are going to vote against Republicans because of how they feel about Trump? Or are they only going to think about, well, these are the two candidates before me, who's going to do a better job for me in Congress? I mean, to me, that remains to be seen. Yeah, how it works out in this election. Because Trump, while he looms large, I mean, in the end, they are voting for a candidate. And in that case, they have the choice of two women. So, I mean, how do you predict what they're going to do?
Well, I think both Julianne and Kevin are right. I think, though, that you're not only women and men are not only voting, may not only be either be turned off by Trump. But let's take that voter. They still have to vote for a candidate. And I don't know that Brian Kemp has run a compelling enough campaign that he's going to persuade the women that I think that we all are kind of the sweet spot in this, which is the inner suburbs of the Northern Arc, the Sandy Springs, and some of the areas where Republican leaning women seem to be the most turned off. So the question is, are they then excited by Kemp? And I don't know that when they saw him aiming a shotgun at a teenage boy, that was something that they're going to remember now and go, yeah, I want to vote for him.
Julianne?
I've said many times on this show that you do not get a true reflection of how voters feel by listening to political talking heads. You get a true reflection by going to your son's baseball game and talking to the baseball moms that are sitting there on the bleachers. And people are happy with the economy in Georgia. They are happy with the direction of our state, of us being the number one place to do business and the number one place in the country to raise a family. They are happy with the leadership of the state for the past 16 years under Governor Perdue and under Governor Deal, and they do not want to change that direction of our state. And I am seeing women in groves that are supportive of Brian Kemp. And we're talking about at school. We're not talking about at political rallies.
So we're going to have to get to a break, but I want to go back to the fact that you were down in Macon for the Trump rally. I asked this question yesterday because we know there are lots of women in those crowds. And you talk about the cable networks. Even what you would consider liberal MSNBC sends reporters out into those crowds and often talk to women about their affection for Donald Trump, and they get a lot of response. But here's what I wonder. I wonder if those – I asked this yesterday, but you're here today. I wonder how many of those people bother to vote. In other words, they're there, it seems to me, because they've watched – President Trump do these rallies for almost 3 years now. They know what the punchlines are. They know what the crowd response they're supposed to have is. So in some ways, it feels like they're participating in an extravagant and exciting reality TV show. And they're couldn't be more enthusiastic. But do they vote?
Well, I think that what you're saying would be correct when it comes to going out and seeing a celebrity, someone like Oprah, who everybody loves, who everybody enjoys and going to watch.
Who doesn't love Oprah?
Well, everybody loves Oprah. Everybody loves Oprah. And I think that what you're saying is correct with regard to a celebrity like Oprah. But I can guarantee you almost 100% that every single person in that audience at the Donald Trump rally in Macon votes. If they care enough to come and camp out, and there were people camping out from 7 o'clock the night before in front of the gates to get into that rally, if they care enough to do that, they're going to show up to the polls to vote early or rain or shine.
Julianne. I think anybody who attends a big political rally like that, whether it was for Donald Trump or for Barack Obama, those are voters. I don't think that I wouldn't share your skepticism about them voting.
I would, though, if I could follow up
on a point that Julianne made. I think that when she talked about the conversations at baseball games, it depends on where the baseball games and the soccer games are. If you went to Grant Park or if you went to Decatur or an area that was full of Democratic-leaning voters, you might have completely different conversations about issues like health care and other things that,
right.
that people are concerned
about.
Right.
I mean, to that point, about. It does bear mentioning really briefly that Trump only got 51% in Georgia. I mean, we're not talking about some huge, overwhelming victory in our state in 2016.
But that goes back to what I said about women not being monolithic in our thinking.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
I've got to get to a break. When we come back, let's just walk through the races. And I want to start, we'll start with the governor's race and talk just briefly about the issues that we think people are turning out to vote based on. By the way, Asar Nazil says, raining hard this morning. I voted Huntley Hills Elementary. The road had cars parked everywhere. I did not go in since I voted early, but that's a good sign. Our friend Cuffy Sullivan of the League of Women Voters at Coastal Georgia says lines are longer than we've seen at our no neighborhood polling place ever. Alan Levine and our friend Ed Lindsay say long lines at 8 at Atlanta, 7B in North Buckhead took about an hour. Nice to catch up with my neighbors. So, Kevin, big turnout out there.
Everybody seems to be voting.
Yeah. All right, let's do a break. And when we come back, let's run down the ballot and see what's happening in terms of who you're voting for or have already voted for.
We got to win this and win this the right way.
Bring it. Bring it on.
For all the results on election night, stay with NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Sarah McCammon. NPR's political team will be live all night watching the close races around the country. Listen on election night, then wake up and hear what the outcome means for America on Morning Edition.
Critical elections, essential coverage.
NPR News.
Join us for all the election results in Georgia coming up tonight starting at 8 here on GPB.
All right, we're going to go through some of the lines on the ballot that people have expressed a lot of interest in. Let's start again with the governor's race. We got Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams. Kevin, it is worth pointing out as we start this that among the candidates for governor, starting all the way back in the primaries when we had a number of people running for both the Republican and the Democratic nomination, if you put them all together, $60 million has been spent on the governor's race. That is staggering.
It is amazing, and you begin to wonder why, if people can, I mean, where will it end? I mean, how much money is it worth to become governor?
Well, apparently there are a lot of interest groups and individuals who think it's worth $60 million
or more.
We can
thank Citizens United. Yeah, money is now, I think, an awful part of politics, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Well, you know, that is. I know that's a very popular thing for a lot of people to say, but don't you think it when people donate money to someone, that it is some proof of the viability of the person? I mean, I get there are big PACs and all this stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, but we don't need $60 million
checks.
Worth. But you could do the same assessment of strength of support at lower levels with caps on contributions.
All right, let's move forward. All right, so Brian Kemp, Stacey Abrams, let's just talk very briefly about what they've done in terms of the issues in this race, okay? So we know, Julianne, way at the top of Stacey Abrams' list. Number one, she said early on, you're going to hear me talk about this in a nerd phrase, ad nauseum. We have to expand Medicaid. We're losing way too much money that we could be bringing in from the federal government. We need that money to kickstart the economy for rural hospitals, to make sure everybody's got health care, all that. And, of course, Brian Kemp says, no way, it's too expensive. The AJC poll shows health care way at the top of people's interests in this election. Is Abrams on the right side of that issue? Republican Julianne Thompson?
Here, I'll answer that.
I think
that the AJC is correct in saying that health care is at the top of everyone's issue. But it's how you approach the health care problems and health care costs is where people differ from each other. And of course, on the Democratic side, they're going to tell you it's Medicaid expansion. On the Republican side, they're going to tell you it is more free market health care, which I happen to agree with. And the bottom line is there are many people, I was one of them until recently when I got a great insurance plan, but there are people who can't afford their insurance premiums. But that goes back to Obamacare and what that did to insurance premiums. And the fact of the matter is, healthcare was high on people's minds in 2016, and that is the reason that 2016, I believe, went the way it did in a lot of parts of the country.
Okay, without trying to litigate an issue that we've talked about a lot on the show, I think I should have asked this a little differently. Elena, Medicaid expansion, Medicaid waivers, that's what Kemp talks about, which in many ways the plan he talks about would help supplement those who are already looking for plans on the exchanges, not have as much impact down on the uninsured. Who's got the better of that argument from a voting point of view, from your point of view?
Well, definitely Abrams right now. The polls have shown that there was wide support for straight up Medicaid expansion. We can definitely talk about waivers because those would also be a step in the right direction depending on how they're constituted.
Yeah, there's lots of different kinds of waivers.
But Medicaid expansion has pretty much always been popular along both sides of the aisle Obamacare passed.
Kevin, let's be realistic about this. The truth is Obamacare has gone from being a bad word to being popular.
Yeah.
And we have watched Republicans shift their position and begin talking about protecting pre-existing conditions when for a long time the argument was we're going to get rid of the whole thing.
Okay,
so there's no question how important it is.
So my really straightforward question, Kevin, would be it strikes me that it's easier for people to grasp what Abrams is talking about than it is to grasp whatever Kemp wants to do because his position – he's come up with some ideas, but it's still not as fully fleshed out. Abrams, it's easy. Give more people health care. You either agree with that or disagree with that, but it's a simpler message, I think, for voters to grasp.
Well, I think she went first and went fast on health care, but I think he's got some issues where he went first and fast, too.
Which ones?
Well, the raise for teachers. I mean, that she has never caught up to that.
All right, good. Let's talk about that. Kemp says, number one, $5,000 raise for teachers, Beth. He came out with that, and people right away said, well, it's a very smart idea. He wants to expand the funding mechanism that would allow people to make contributions that would accrue to private schools. And on the other hand, Abrams says, no way. Public education needs all of our support, all of our money. She does not like the program that gives tax credits for private education. And she may not be very high on charter schools either. There's been some questions asked about that throughout this campaign. Who wins that argument?
I think that Kevin is right, that Kemp scored a point or two by going out earlier on teacher pay raises. As a former public school teacher, I think she wins the argument overall because I do think that we should be doing everything we can to support public schools and not divert taxpayer dollars into non-public schools.
Well, right. And how is he going to give all the teachers a raise and also
details,
put more
Elena,
money
details.
Into? Hey, as someone who has to look at these bills every year, I can tell you that those two things are not happening together, for sure.
Who wins that argument,
Julianne?
Well,
I will disagree with the two Democrats that are sitting
we
on the
are
panel.
So,
wait. Let me point out, you're right. Julianne is the lone Republican today. let me count the ways and the time. So we've had two Republicans and one Democrat, and all of you out there
it's
on Facebook Live or Twitter.
But you can handle it, Julianne.
I'm fine.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if I was only damn, I can handle it too.
She's taking good care of herself.
I will disagree with them respectfully. I do believe that Kemp wins the education argument, and I believe it from the same standpoint that I talked about a few minutes ago. If you listen to what people are saying on those bleachers, and yes, people were very excited about the teacher pay raises. They were excited about expanding school security, which he also talked about, the $30,000 startup for every school to expand school security, to have counseling, to add counseling programs for at-risk teens, and all of the details that were in his education plan.
And
it wasn't just $5,000 raises. I mean, that was just the beginning of it. And he has a plan for it. People are excited about it. And when it comes to charter schools, Stacey Abrams did oppose charter schools. And that is something that polled extremely high on both sides of the aisle. And if you went to any of the charter school rallies, which I did, they were full of Republicans and Democrats and multitudes of African-American women who wanted their children to have more choice in public education, which included
charter schools. Stacey Abrams does not oppose charter schools. She did vote no on the charter school constitutional amendment. That is not the same thing as opposing charter schools.
There it is.
No, it's not. This is going to get in the weeds if I respond, but no, I mean, what you're talking about with that are just the 13 to 15 or 18 that are commissioned by the state. There are plenty of charter schools all over that are, it is certainly possible to believe in charter schools and think they work best when they work in concert with the plans of the local school district.
Right.
And many Democrats think that.
All right. So we've had an argument about, I just want to go over what the campaigns have argued about, and they've argued about education over and over again.
One thing that is out there, Bill, that I just think is worth talking about, and this is another divisive issue. Governor Deal got a lot of credit for his insistence on the way the religious liberty bills played out, and some people will say that's one of the reasons Georgia remains one of the best states within which to do business. And that, I think, is out there as a concern among business leaders in the state. And Kemp has said he will sign that bill.
He has said that he will sign a bill, to be clear. There was probably a time when Brian Kemp very well might have agreed with Josh McCoon about a bill structured in such a way that it would have been gone beyond what the feds did when President Clinton was in office. I believe that Kemp is now saying he would sign a bill if it mimics the language that a Democratic
that's
president
correct.
signed in federal office. Do you think that's an issue people are voting on? As a business leader, are you going to vote on the basis of that, Beth?
I think business leaders are. I think that they look at what happened to North Carolina and other states and the backlash there. And we don't have to get in the weeds on this, but I'll give you just a quick thing about these so-called religious freedom bills, is that the problem in Georgia is that there's no statewide statutory protection for discrimination that covers sexual orientation and/or gender identity.
We have no civil rights.
We have no statewide civil rights statute. And on that point, just last night, the city of Doraville became only the second city in Georgia, Atlanta being the first, to enact a statute, an ordinance that protects citizens there from discrimination on a range of issues or characteristics, including sexual identity and gender orientation.
Okay, let's keep going. Immigration. Julianne, your candidate, Brian Kemp, has, we know the pickup truck. He's from the very beginning adopted a very hard line on his feelings about undocumented immigrants in Georgia. We know that the president has been promoting the caravan as an example of the lawlessness that could overtake us if Democrats win these elections around the country. Where do you think the average voter really stands on the issue of immigration? Abrams says DACA recipients should get the Hope Scholarship. I think they absolutely should. She's been accused of suggesting that undocumented residents of Georgia should be given a chance to vote, but she's never said that once. That's a myth. So who wins that argument?
I think that the bottom line for the vast majority of voters is what I talked about earlier. The things that are on their mind are the economy, jobs, job security, and making sure that their families have opportunities, that their children stay in Georgia because there's opportunities in Georgia and that our streets are safe. And I think that because those have been the main issues, there have been a lot of people that have been extremely happy with those things. And until the past couple of weeks, many of those people, many Republicans sometimes do not feel, and swing voters do not feel like they need to get out to the polls because they're satisfied with their life and the way that things are going. And they take for granted that those things could change in a heartbeat. And I think that that is the reason why Secretary Kemp and why the president have been talking about some of the dangers that could occur with illegal immigration, because it is important to a lot of people and it does drive voter turnout.
Beth, the president says there's a caravan coming. It's filled with people who are members of vicious gangs. It may have people who are Islamic terrorists in it. Fox News has taken it a step further on a number of occasions to say it's also filled with people who have terrible diseases like smallpox and leprosy and that sort of thing. I don't want to argue about whether any of what the president says is true or not. We've seen no reason to believe any of the things that he's saying about this. What I want to do on Election Day is say, who do you think that helps? Voters who are looking at a Republican candidate for governor or a Democratic candidate for governor?
I would go back and argue that we're in tribes now. We are Republicans, we are Democrats. And I think that the number one issue on the ballot today is Donald Trump. And that's energizing Republicans, but it's also generating what I think is going to be a record turnout among Democratic voters throughout the state, because we are just completely appalled at the state of the country and the temperament and tone of his leadership. And immigration is a perfect example of that. And the descriptions that you just cited are perfect examples of that. Donald Trump and the facts do not have a very close relationship. And he just makes stuff up. And there's no proof for anything that he's saying about these families, these women, these kids who are fleeing oppressive conditions in their home countries. And it's just all about frightening people.
You get 30 seconds to respond to that, Julianne.
When you're talking about dreamers, when you're talking about people that are here that want to become American citizens, you see the electorate looking at that in a positive way. When you're talking about the caravans, you see a lot of people that normally would support DACA, you see them turning and you see them saying, I'm sorry, that's where I draw the line. And so I think that that is why that has become such a campaign issue.
I think it's fascinating. I have talked to people out there, some I know very, very well, who really believe the caravan is coming and they're pleased that President Trump is protecting them against it, and others who are horrified
by the language.
I think
there's no question. It helps candidates that are aligned with President Trump,
okay,
without getting into the truth of the matter.
We got to get to another break. We'll do that when we come back. More on Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, as our divided nation awaits the outcome of Election Day, we talk about the most divisive issue in our nation's history. Our guest will be Andrew DelBanco, author of the new book, The War Before the War. It's about the divisions over slavery and the struggle for America's soul from the Revolution to the Civil War. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3, here on GPB and gpbnews.org.
We've got a big election.
I am committed.
We believe that this is going to be a movement.
I am passionate.
They're going to say we can't win.
I am asking you to stand with me.
Today, the votes are coming in. Who will win and what will it mean for the country? Find out with live election night results and analysis from around the U.S. Critical elections, essential coverage, NPR News.
Join us for all the results and analysis tonight starting at 8 here on GPB Radio.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We go down the ballot a little bit once we get past Abrams and Kemp. Interesting, we've got a race for lieutenant governor between two non-incumbents. We don't have an incumbent in that race. Jeff Norman is the Republican.
Jeff Duncan.
What did I say?
Norman.
Oh, Jeff Duncan. I apologize, Mr. Duncan. And Secretary of State, we have Republican Brad Raffensperger against John Barrow. Of course, that race to replace Brian Kemp in that position. One of the things I think is interesting about this, Elena, is at least the AJC's polling on those races, like the governor's race, shows it virtually a dead heat. When was the last time that Democrats in constitutional offices seemed to have an opportunity maybe to win?
Right. In recent history, obviously, it will be the closest round of elections we've had since probably 2002. And I think you have to we are a very diverse state. We're a large state. We have a huge metropolitan area. We have lots of people that move from outside of Georgia. And we've got an incredibly diverse electorate. And the message coming that President Trump runs on is not particularly conducive in a state that is not overwhelmingly white working class anymore.
I would say, let's face it, the fact that John Barrow has been doing as well as he has is because he has tried to distance himself from the Democrats. I mean, he has said, I'm a Democrat, but I don't bite. I think that he has tried his best to say, I'm a centrist. I don't align with.
Well, you're not complaining about a campaign strategy that Republicans say might take in distancing themselves from Donald Trump.
No, and there are Republicans that have done that. I'm saying that I believe it's close because he believes that's close at the top.
And so it's smart of Barrow because Abrams is at the top. She can excite the African American base. Then Barrow can try to pick off some more of the independent white folks in the middle.
You really get the feeling, though, that because things are so polarized, whichever way this thing breaks, it's going to break top to bottom.
You really
wonder in the state, in the House, in the Senate, if that's what's going to happen, is everyone's going to just vote straight.
Well, we're not going to see the Senate and House flip to Democratic. That's for sure. Democrats may pick up some seats. Right. But
you mean State House and State Senate.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Beth, I think Barrow, I kind of disagree with. I mean, Julianne's right. Barrow's run a very clever campaign. I love that line. I'm a Democrat, but I don't bite. I'd love it if it were a Republican saying that. But Barrow's also, he was a pretty popular member of Congress. He was always kind of a moderate force. I don't know whether he'd be a better Secretary of State than Raffensperger or not, but he starts with a likability factor, I think, that gives him a little momentum.
I agree. I think the bigger piece of news to me is that here we are on Election Day, and we have a governor's race in which the Republican candidate has not exceeded 50% in any of the public polling.
Yeah.
And we have a virtual tie at the top. We have virtual ties down the ticket.
Yep.
And I think that as a Democrat going into Election Day, that's very exciting to me because I do think this ultimately has a very strong chance of breaking our way.
Are we going to see a runoff? I give each of you a chance.
I don't think I can take it.
It's definitely possible. And, you know, there are two schools of thought. Number one is that typically, you know, the electorate shrinks more. It's the higher educated or, you know, white voters tend to come out more for runoffs. But then I've had folks say, you know, the environment's very different. The amount of money, the hyperactive Democrat small donor network that has been so excited this fall could jump in for Stacey because she'll be one of the few things going on. And that the Dems could be the ones who end up more mobilized.
But are we going to? But a runoff.
Could work for Stacey.
I think it's well within the realm of possibility that Stacey can win this thing without a runoff. And a lot of the points are what I made earlier in the conversation, which I know everybody has remembered all of them. But I think a point that I haven't made yet is that we have had for the first time in my lifetime as a Democrat, which is my entire life, seen Democratic candidates in Georgia up and down the ballot running their own little mini coordinated campaigns. Carolyn Bordeaux running against Rob Woodall in Gwinnett County. Every weekend I'll see posts of hers. She's out campaigning with this House candidate or this commission seat candidate. And so there's a lot of synergy. We've got some great Democratic candidates right. winning great grassroots campaigns who are going to bring out voters.
I'm going to hurry you along, and I apologize. Julianne, I know you think Kemp wins without a runoff tonight.
I do.
So, all right. So another couple quick items.
I did want to say, real quick, do not let libertarians ruin Thanksgiving for the entire state of Georgia. get out and vote.
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Real quick. We have been watching two congressional races, especially. I know down in coastal Georgia, our friends think we should be paying more attention to Buddy Carter and Lisa Ring, but we're just not seeing the same kind of energy down there. Sorry. We've now got a couple of the major data crunchers saying that Lucy McBath and Karen Handel, that they are in a dead heat and that Karen Handel maybe can pull this thing out. Over in the 7th, they're not as enthusiastic, the data crunchers, about Carolyn Bordeaux's potential against incumbent Rob Woodall. But if Abrams, Julianne, brings out voters in that North Metro arc, that could be bad news for Republicans, couldn't it?
Well, it would be bad news as far as the governor's race goes. It's not going to be bad news for Rob Woodall. Rob Woodall is going to win that race. I believe Karen Handel is going to win as well, although it's going to be closer in that race.
They could both lose. But let's say they both hang on, or if I was either one of them, I'd be really stressed about 2020.
All right, Kevin, we've got some great races. Your staff at the AJC, ours here at GPB. It's going to be a very exciting night.
It is. I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate all the hard work people are doing out there, and certainly on the AJC staff and on GPB staff, not to mention all these wise consultants and political operatives who are in the studio with us.
All right. We're really just about out of time for today's show. Thank you all for a spirited conversation. I really appreciate it. Passions run high on Election Day. And one of the things I love about Political Rewind is that you all come together and you all talk respectfully to one another. I appreciate that a lot. So thank you all very much.
You don't let us sit by each other so we can't arm wrestle.
Beth Shapiro, Elena Parent, Julianne Thompson, and Kevin Riley. I have just enough time. A couple things. Tom Faust whispered in my ear during the last break that not only is there a huge turnout of the polls, but you all have been just really cramming your voices into Facebook Live. Lots and lots of comments. I'd really suggest that you go on Facebook Live and look at what our listeners are saying. If you don't do that with any regularity, there's a lot of really interesting things being posted. The other thing I wanted to mention again is we're going to be here for a long night tonight. We go on TV with a special election night edition of Political Rewind at 7. Audrey Haynes, University of Georgia political science professor, will be here. Amy Steigerwald, Georgia State University political science professor, Caesar Mitchell, former president of the Atlanta City Council, and Republican and longtime Political Rewind insider Loretta Lepore will be here for that. We'll do an hour on GPB TV across the state. It'll also be on Facebook Live. At 8 o'clock, we're coming right back into our Political Rewind studio, and we will begin coverage throughout the night. And Tom Faust, Robert Jimison, and our staff, we're determined to stay here if it's 4 a.m.
Is
right,
that Facebook
Tom,
Live also?
That'll be on Facebook Live also. Thank you, Beth. Appreciate your making that point. So we're with you all night and hope you will join us for our coverage as we move through the evening. Thanks for your spirited participation on Facebook and Twitter. We'll see you all later today.